give you a very short presentation now. Let's forgo the introduction.
Yes. Thank you. So right. This is the final presentation before the network break. And we'll have about 15, 17, 16 minutes of presentation and a couple of minutes for the question. I don't want to take more time, so let me just introduce the speaker. Alan Grumill is he's a principal consultant at Rycom Consulting, and he's going to talk about getting over the self-test hurdle. Welcome.
Thank you, Nitya. Thank you. Okay. Hello. So, I spend my time helping vendors get through FIPS, Common Criteria Evaluation, and I've been doing it for a very long time, and over the years, it's one thing that's, a couple of years ago it struck me that self-tests it's got a lot harder than it was when I first started. I think the first module I did, we had DES, we had RSA, it was firmware, so we just had a checksum. You did some encryption, some decryption, you checked a signature, and that was all you needed to do. But now the complexity of the task has got to the point where I need to, it's now a big part of what I do. You know, I have tools that I use to help make sure that we don't miss things and that we do things properly. And today, I'm going to very quickly talk about how to avoid missing things when you're implementing a self-test, because if you miss one and it gets to the lab, it can easily add a month to any evaluation cycle. How to do them efficiently so that you don't waste processor cycles, so that you don't keep your customers waiting, and other compliance issues relating to self-tests. I'm going to talk about ISO 19790. I'm going to talk about common criteria, but essentially, I'm mainly going to be talking about FIPS 140-2 today. Okay, so self-tests are the things that you have to do at startup or pre-operationally, and when specific conditions occur, relating to the algorithms that you're supporting in your module or in your toe. So FIPS 140 has power-up and conditional tests. ISO 19790 has pre-operational conditional tests, and common criteria has self-tests that are written into security targets and protection profiles, but they're usually, it's just a fill in the gaps, and you can defer to the self-test that you already do for other things. So let's just skip this slide. Okay, so again, mainly I'm going to be talking about power-up self-tests today. Conditional self-tests are obviously also applicable. I won't spend a lot of time on software firmware integrity tests, because the previous speaker did a more than adequate job of that, and hopefully I'm back on schedule now. Okay. Ooh, dear. So when we're talking about self-tests, we're mainly talking about algorithm tests, typically that will take the form of a known answer test. So, you've got known plain text, known key, you encrypt it, you get known ciphertext if you're doing encrypt, and reverse it if you're doing a decrypt. There are some exceptions to this. Some algorithms have ALV outputs that may vary for a given set of inputs, and you can't do a known answer test, such as RSA, PSS, but that can be met by a pairwise consistency test. But the nice thing about that is, if you're doing RSA PSS, you're probably using RSA for something else as well, and you can use with all algorithms, with RSA and with the others as well, you only need the one known answer test. So if you're doing RSA PSS but you're using RSA for something else, then you do your standard RSA CAT using your pre-computed values, and you don't have to do the other tests. Now, there is a deliberate mistake on this slide. Well, it wasn't deliberate, but during the course of, I didn't update it, so it's still there. So it turns out that with AAS, you tend to find that most vendors have a separate test for, well, you have to have a separate test for encrypt and decrypt, but most vendors have a additional test for each mode they use. Now, it's good practice because it means that you're properly testing all of your algorithms, but it's not a requirement of the standard. So if you want to save some CPU cycles, you can just do, and you support, say, AES 128, 256, 192, CBC, CFB, you know, all the modes, then you can just do a single encrypt, single decrypt, and save yourself some time. Something that people often forget is that all your RNGs need to have a conditional continuous RNG test, not just the approved ones. So if you're using some other RNG for entropy, then if it looks like an RNG, and you need to test it like an RNG as well. So when it comes to missing things, there was an issue, it feels like a couple of years ago, but it was probably longer than that, where people were not putting the Section 11 health test into their SP890A implementations, and CNBP came out and said, well, you know, the labs really need to be looking at this, and you know, a lot of vendors sort of took a step back and thought, oh dear, what have we done? Because it's not just the algorithms that you need to self-test. There are other elements. So, you know, you need to have a known answer test for your DRBG, but you also need to have your Section 11 health test. If you're doing Diffie-Hellman, you don't need to have a self-test for the whole of Diffie-Hellman, but you do need to have a primitive Z computation test. And there are, you know, there are also self-tests associated with RSA SP856B. But there are other elements. So there are things that you can get a CAVP certificate for, but they don't need self-tests. So certain KDFs, AES key wrapping, you don't need to have self-tests for those. So it's a little bit inconsistent. You can't just say, well, what algorithms have I certified, and just put self-tests in for all those, because some of them won't need it, and some of them some of them just don't need it. And there are other things that you don't get a CAVP test certificate for, like your non-approved RNGs, where you do need to have them tested. And also, you don't need, even with your approved algorithms, you don't need to have them all tested. So, for instance, with SHA, you don't need to have a separate self-test for each of your SHA variants, for each of your SHA. So if you implement SHA-512, SHA-384, SHA-256, you don't need self-tests for all of them, but you do need self-tests for the for a subset of those variants. So for instance, it says here, you know, if you're implementing 512, that gets you out of jail for SHA-384. You don't need a test for that, but you do need one but include the one for 512. For HMAC, you don't need self-test for every SHA variant that you're doing your HMAC on. So you could just get away with doing a self-test for HMAC SHA-1 and not bother with HMAC SHA-512 and save yourself some time. I'm not saying you should do this, but I'm just saying, you know, the requirements are that you don't need to. And when it comes to doing your integrity test, you know, doing an HMAC is faster than RSA, but it's not. I did some research in this as part of this, preparing for this talk, and the you know, the differential isn't as much as I used to think it was. You know, you're only talking, you know, microseconds. You're not talking, you know, like minutes, as I've been led to believe by some of the developers that I work with. So on top of all that, you know, even when you've got your self-tests, you need to ensure that they're called at the right time, and that you react to success and failure in the correct way. So you need to run them when the module is powered up before you use the algorithms. So, and they need to be run automatically without requiring any operator intervention, and it shouldn't be possible to deactivate them. And it's very important that before you've completed your self-test that the module doesn't output any data. And that when you've completed your self-test, an operator can determine what the outcome of those has been. And most importantly, that you don't pass any data while you're in an error state. So, yeah, during the transition, so just to conclude, during the transition from FIPS 140-2 to FIPS 140-3, I'd remember that FIPS 140-2 modules are probably FIPS 140-3 compliant, at least with respect to the power-up self-tests. And so it's safe to continue down that road. But yeah, I'd avoid sort of fully taking up the some of the nice benefits that you get with the new version until we have it. And although the requirements are complex, there are a lot of them. They're not that complicated. So you know, as long as you've got a process in place for ensuring. I mean, I spend a lot of time reviewing code. I spend a lot of time, you know, with vendors, you know, just ticking checkboxes, because even when they tell you they've done it, you know, you look at their code and they haven't, or you look at their code and they've done something not quite what you expect them to do. So, you know, a lot of these things, it's just down to attention to detail, and that will make your life. That will make your life easier. So, thank you.
Any questions?
Hi.
The health tests in 90A.
Yeah.
There seems to be there's confusion between me and my lab. We did two different validations, and one validator, one security engineer, felt that the instantiate, reseed, you know, generate had to be three separate tests. And another one said, no, you can do it all in one.
Yeah.
So that's created a bit of confusion on our side.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, we've got a very knowledgeable audience here, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I think just doing them all in one is fine. No one contradicting me? Okay, so yeah, go with that.
What is this continuous random test?
Well, that's just a test. There's a conditional test that whenever you get a random number from your random number generator, you have to compare. So what you do is the first time you run your random number generator, you just keep that value as a check value, and every time subsequently, you compare the value you get with the check value, and if they're different, that's a pass, and then your new value becomes your check value. And if they're the same, then that's a fail. But, you know, in all probability, every now and again, you're going to get two values that match just purely randomly, and so even though it's a fail, you can just get another one, repeat it until you pass, or until you run out of time and then you know something's broken.
Okay. So I have a comment and a question. So if I'm running my random number generator, I generated a random number, let's say it's N.
Yeah.
Next time, I run it again, and I'm getting N, and I'm getting N again.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I need to run this continuous test which you're telling me to run.
Yeah.
At the same time, if my random number generator is a 90B compliant random number generator,
yeah,
my health test from 90B should kick in and fail my random number generator based on the NIST recommendations. My entropy subsystem should report a catastrophic error, and I shouldn't be getting into the condition which you're telling. So my question is it redundant or do we still need it?
No, I mean, the two things, you know, your entropy and your random number generator are a system. So independently, they need to be healthy. And you know, it's quite possible for one or other to fail, And or for them both to be working correctly, but you still get a failure just out of a purely random occurrence.
So under like the 90 A, B, and C, where do like this test will fall?
Well, that would be.
Because if I'm complying,
well, the continuous random number generator test is just a conditional test required by FIPS 140-2. The health tests are in, you know, the DBRG health tests are in 90A, the entropy health tests are in B, and then presumably in C, you know, once you combine it into a system, then you're a key generation system, then you're going to have some emergent health testing in that system as well. So I don't think there's any conflict or contradiction.
If I may add also, entropy is a static one-time test that you're doing, whereas continuous random number is a requirement of the FIPS that every time the the module is active, you have to, and you're getting a random number.
So the health test defined by the 90B, so entropy estimate is static, but the health test run continuously.
They have
two tests, one
like
adaptive proportion, and the other one is some cutoff value test. So they have defined the tests that are supposed to run continuously.
Yeah, I think Carolyn wants to add something there. Carolyn, do you
want to
add?
Well, it's a draft.
It
will be a stand in a couple of months.
Eventually.
So currently, as it exists, entropy is a static test that we do, whereas random number generator is a random number test, is a continuous random number test, is a requirement within the FIPS
for
the active module.
One thing wasn't very clear to me from the scheme, the key, the public key schemes in one of the slides you mentioned.
Yeah.
If you ran as part of the self-test, if you ran one public key scheme, you don't need to run the others.
No. Sorry, I didn't mean to confuse you.
Okay.
It's per algorithm. So I was just focusing on RSA. So if you do DSA and EC DSA, they will also need their own test. They're different algorithms.
Right.
But if you've got three RSA schemes, then you only need to test the one.
That's right.
Last question, please.
Okay.
Last question.
It's a remark. So the last approved DRBGs left are those from 800-90A, and there is an IG that says you don't need to run the continuous random number generator test on that.
Okay.
Because of the health tests, which are already included in 90A, it's not deemed necessary to still have the continuous random number generator test.
Okay. I didn't see that. So what IG is that? Do you know, Arnold?
Look for continuous random number generated test and you will find it.
Okay, so that's even less CPU cycles. Sorry?
9.8.
Okay. So, sorry to mislead you, everyone, but that's even less CPU cycles you've got to waste on algorithm testing now. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Thank you once again, Alan. And now we have a break. The break is for 20 minutes. So we'll see you again in this track at 3:00. Thank you.